what? If you would have had gummy bears, yeah, that leaf, that those branches might not have been there.
Yeah, it's I'm good. I'm golden.
Yeah,
Well, my first shelter was, it was 7 pounds.
Right? You know, you watch those videos and yeah, the guy, 15 minutes, a guy shoots a giant buck or, you know.
Just a different experience. I think a lot of the years I had hunting with my dad growing up, we had some unfortunate experiences with other hunters.
A little tired and sore this morning, licking my wounds from yesterday, but
You know, I'd rather go backpack, you know, 5 miles in somewhere and hunt 3 bears than hunt 20 bears close to the road.
I better have some gummy bears in my pocket, that's for sure. If I don't get
gummy bears, gummy bears and coffee and...
Thanks everyone for tuning into the Focus Hunting Podcast, brought to you by the Waypoint Outdoor Collective. For more information on Waypoint, head on over to www.waypointtv.com, see what they got going on over there. Okay, in this episode I'm joined by my new pal Josh Kirshner. Some of you might know him as the Dialed In Hunter. Josh, he's just he's a straight beauty. He's an author, avid hunter, and you know, he's had tons of success in the backcountry, so really enjoyed this conversation with Josh. Him and I discuss his book, Becoming a Backpack Hunter, which is a great book. You guys can head on over to Amazon, pick up a copy of that. We talk a lot about black bear hunting. We also talk about archery training and what to bring on a 3-day backpack hunt. So I think you guys are going to really like this episode. For more information on Josh, head on over to his webpage. It's dialedinhunter.com. Okay, quickly before getting into the show, and with only 2 more months until elk opens, I want to remind you guys about Elk 101. Now, I don't care if you've guys bagged elk in the past or if you're still looking to tag your first. This course has information available for pretty much everyone. So go over there, check out what Corey's got going on, and I guarantee you're going to take something away from it and be able to use it in the field. So while you're there, make sure you use the promo code FOCUS. You guys are going to get 20% off. Yeah, he's got great stuff over there. Anyway, let's just get rolling with this episode.
Hey, what's up, man?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Sorry for the delay.
It's all good, buddy. I got to...
Yeah, I just got like a new laptop, and I was like, oh, sweet. I can gonna use this for this Zoom call, and I didn't even realize I didn't have Zoom installed.
It's all good, buddy. It happens.
Yeah, how are you?
Good, man. A little tired and... sore this morning, licking my wounds from yesterday, but
yeah. So you missed, if I remember correctly, you said you misjudged the yardage, or what happened?
Well, so I decided to go out early yesterday morning and see if I can fill tag number 2 for black bear. About 9:30, I got found a nice size bear and waited him out a bit, and then he came in, got him into about 55 yards, and there was I was behind a tree, and I was waiting for him to walk out from these other trees, and I couldn't get a clear shot of him, so I moved a bit, and then in the line of sight, there was one branch sticking out. It had some leaves off it, mm-hmm, and I just misjudged my arrow path. I stood up, and I was like, I seen it there, and I was like, well, no, I'm going to be good. Drew back, stepped forward. I got a shot on him. He ran off. And, you know, my eyes were focusing on where he was running. And then I looked back up and I could see that branch moving up and down.
Ugh.
And then I just had a bad feeling in my stomach. So gave it a sec, walked back over to where he was, found my arrow, no blood on the fletchings, but I found a little bit of blood right where he was standing.
Sure.
So. Yeah, I was like, oh shit. So I backed out of there for a bit, went and sat down, had some water, grabbed a quick bite, gave him a little bit, and then I went after him and found a little bit of blood, and I tracked him for, man, I don't know, about 5 hours, but there wasn't a lot of blood, and it was just the arrow must have went high and just caught him on the back.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. That's, I've done the same thing. You know, you find think you hit him and then find the arrow and it's like, damn it. You know, like there's like not a lot of blood on it. You just kind of a telltale sign. It was a backstrap hit pretty much.
And you know, I know better than that. Like, you know, I've practiced AeroPath, sure, you know, all that stuff. And I just, I seen the branch there and I was like, oh man. So I kind of was like, oof, maybe I'll crunch down a bit. And then it, you know, it wasn't a very good shot. So I just crouched up a bit and I was like, yeah, I'm good. I'm golden.
Yeah.
Like I said, and I could see him run off and then my eyes just focused on that branch and that branch is moving up and down. And I was just like that, you know, you get that gut wrenching feeling like, oh shit.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, he ran quite a bit and, you know, I'm pretty confident that he lived. And unfortunately today it's raining, so I can't even go double back. It's going to be pretty tough. But yeah, he ran for quite a bit. And by the end, I didn't even see any blood. But I, you know, on those grassy hills, you know, it's like you can get those bears. And if you get the right light, it's almost like a yellow brick road. You can see where they ran off through the bush. So tracked that for the last little bit and didn't see any blood. So I'm pretty, you know, I think it was just really high.
They're tough, man. How long is your season? Are you going to get back out or?
Yeah, our season. So we have a spring season and a fall season. So we have April 1st to June 30th. We can hunt black bear, and then again September 1st to the end of November. So, and we're allowed two black bears. So yeah, we're pretty liberal with our seasons up here in British Columbia.
Oh, you guys are drowning in bears, aren't you?
Yeah, man, we got a lot of bears for sure. I think we've got more bears than we got people.
I was talking to a friend. He had someone on his podcast and the guy was telling him that he totally stopped hunting bears with a rifle up there in British Columbia because it was too easy.
Yeah.
And he just like hunts them with a bow now because there's so many damn bears.
Yeah. There's a lot of bears. You get into some areas, man, and it's, you know, it's crazy. And, you know, a few years back, they canceled the grizzly bear hunt on us up here. And,
yep.
You know, we've seen lately a lot more bears. I think that's just because the grizzlies are pushing them out a bit closer to where they're easier to get to. But we got a lot of bears, no shortage of bears up here.
Is it, do you have a lot of hunting pressure up there or no?
You know, I don't think we get a lot of guys out spring bear hunting. Gotcha. It's tough. I mean, I know a lot of people who buy bear tags and they buy it just to have in their pocket, just in case they come across a bear. Right. But that's more typically for in the fall.
Yep.
So, it's hard to say, but I like getting out after them in the spring. I don't hunt them in the fall. There's just, you know, too much else going on. So I like,
that was my bread and butter when I first started bear hunting, because fall bear hunting down here is much more popular than spring bear hunting. I mean, for the longest time, spring bear hunting, the spring season was looked at as a, just like a ploy for Game and Fish to get more money from us. And I never even knew anyone that was successful spring bear hunting ever. But then in the fall, like we have the phenomena, the bears and the pears thing that happens, where they come down, like on a dry year, they'll come down into the desert and they'll feed on prickly pear cactuses. So like, that's always been a lot more appealing and people come from all over the country to try to experience that. So the spring thing has flown under the radar for quite a bit, but I think it's kind of catching on now. I'm seeing more and more people out there spring hunting.
Yeah, it's definitely, I like it. It just, I first started bear hunting because it just broke up the, you know, the daunting long winter and spring, and you didn't have to wait as nearly as long till September to run around. And then I just started loving it. You know what I mean? Like, I love bear hunting. It's just one of those things. You know, I started out earlier when I was, you know, and I loved turkey hunting and, you know, loved getting out there. And then I, you know, but now it's, you know, I'm kind of the opposite. I would rather chase bear than chase those turkeys. I don't know.
Yeah, oh yeah, me too, man.
Now you're down in Arizona, is that right?
Yeah.
Now you guys have black bear down in Arizona?
Oh yeah.
No shit, eh?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, we have. I mean, we're not
desert bears.
We're not drowning in bears like y'all are up there in British Columbia, but like, I think our bear population sits around last I checked, like right around like 3,000 or so. I think there's probably more than that. The issue is it's just so damn hard to, it's so damn hard to count bears for the game and fish, because they don't fly them. You know, they don't fly for them like they do for deer and elk. And the bears are just so hard to see. They're in these, like, a lot of them are in these nasty holes that, you know, you don't even know they're there anyway. So I think there's more than that. But yeah, that's the quoted number that gets put in magazines and stuff is 3,000 for Arizona.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough to count bears. I mean, up here they have rough estimates, and I think they estimate at around 160 or 180,000 black bears. But I don't see how they could count them. I mean, like you look at British Columbia, and it's all not a lot of open spaces in British Columbia, and to get an actual, you know, accurate count, I don't know, man. We have a lot of bears.
Yeah, no, I got to get up there one day, man. Try to hunt some of those bears up there. I went to Idaho for the first time this year, and that was really cool. Definitely gonna plan on doing that. But yeah, I've always been used to I'm not used to plethoras of bears. So we'll work. I mean, goodness gracious, if I go out for 3-4 days and I see one or two bears, I'm pretty stoked.
Yeah, and see up here, I mean, you could see 10, 12 bears a day, and you really get the pick of the litter with which ones you want up here. But I mean, we're pretty spoiled in British Columbia, just so, you know, the game in general. But
that sounds like Disneyland to me.
Yeah. So, what kind of, like, what methods of hunting are you doing down there for black bear?
Baiting is illegal. You can't bait down here. Hounds are legal. So a lot of guys will like to run hounds. You're not allowed to do that in the springtime, though. That's only a fall thing.
Oh yeah.
So for me personally, what I it's largely spot and stalk hunting, ambush hunting over water, or calling is how we primarily hunt bears here. Yeah.
Yeah. Those are basically the same methods I use. We're the same. You're not allowed to bait. You're not allowed to use electric calls. You can use, you know, a voice call, but yeah. So it's a lot of spot and stalk, still hunting, you know, that works pretty good, just because, again, you know, if you walk down any old forestry service road or any old logging road or even a trailhead, I mean, you know, there's a good chance you're going to come up on one or two bears for sure. But that just goes back to, you know, the abundance of bears we have up here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool,
that's
man.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah. So, well, maybe, you know, I got a list of questions here for you. So maybe we'll just get rolling. And, you know, I usually start off with, you know, getting you tell everybody where you're hitting you up from today. But we kind of already went over that. You're from Arizona. But you started out your early life on the East Coast, didn't you?
Yeah. So I was born in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I don't really remember that part of my life. I was only there for about a year. And then we moved out to New York for the next 8 years. And my dad kind of, you know, we did a lot of fishing out there in the ocean. And he always had hunting magazines and stuff like that, like showed Western hunting. And so it was always kind of a fantasy of mine to get out there, you know. And it just so happened my mom's family lives in Arizona. So in order to, you know, bring me into like a better environment for an upbringing, because New York is not the greatest. New York is not the greatest place to raise a child. It's just, especially where we were in Queens. So it's not,
you know, sorry to interrupt you, man. I can't even, like, there's more people in New York than there is in our country, and our country's bigger than you. So it's like, it blows me away, the amount of people there. Just put that in perspective, eh? It's crazy.
Oh yeah, dude, it's wild. And there's some, I mean, it's crazy too. You know, it's like see some wild stuff in New York. So my dad grew up there, and he grew up a wildcat. So he could kind of see the future, you know, like if they brought me up there, I was probably going to go down the same path, you know. So moved out west to Arizona when I was nine, like almost nine. And I've been here ever since. I'm 35 years old now. Goodness.
Wow. Cool. So what was your first impressions of your new home at the time? Or can you remember back that far?
Oh, dude, my first impressions was I couldn't believe how nice everyone was.
Yeah, like out of the big city.
Yeah, dude, in Arizona, everyone was like saying hi and stuff. I'm like, it's almost off-putting to me because I just wasn't used to that. Like, used to people being like, just kind of mad at the world and standoffish, which is how New York primarily is, at least my experience. But out here in Arizona, man, yeah, everyone was super nice. And I couldn't believe another thing, like when I moved out here, I had never seen a mountain before. So like, we were driving down the highway, like got off the plane, get into a vehicle, and immediately there's mountains surrounding the valley. And that was just really cool for me, man. I'm like, holy crap, I'm in the Wild West now, you know? Like it was a completely different world from what I was used to. And I think from a pretty early age, I decided, I'm like, I never want to leave this place, you know? Just, it seems perfect to me.
Yeah, no doubt. I've never been down there, but seems like a cool place. I'd love to go down there and chase some desert muleys.
Oh yeah, yeah. The December and January hunts down here are really fun, man. When they're
I bet. Yeah, no doubt. I mean, our December and January hunts are, you know, for cougars and wolves, and there's 6 or 7 feet of snow you're snowshoeing through. So
yeah,
it'd be pretty cool for sure. So you mentioned you guys or your dad, he was did a bit of fishing in that out back east. How did you get into hunting?
Well, my dad, so he got me into fishing when I was younger, but he did a fair amount of hunting before I was born, out in New Mexico and then in New York as well. So he was always into hunting, but we just never, like, he never went hunting when I was a kid while we were living in New York. So it was never something I was exposed to. So when we went out to Arizona, that was one of the first things on his to-do list. Was like, he put in for, I think it was a rifle mule deer hunt, and got drawn. And so when I was 8 and a half, that fall, we went on our first hunt in Arizona, which happened to be my first camping trip too. Like, I had never slept out in a tent before, nothing like that. So it was all super new to me, cold, you know, some elk came through camp the first night we were there, you know? Yeah, no. Hey, listen, cold for me is different than you. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So it was, yeah, it was cool, man. And then my dad ended up taking me out, showed me some deer and stuff. And that was, you know, I've kind of lived that life ever since I was a kid, you know? And then when I got, but right then though, it was just really like a once a year thing. Like, it was only like, you know, your annual deer camp. And then, when I got older, you know, like mid-20s ish, I was like, man, I just really want to do a lot more of this, you know, and like being a little bit more independent and have a vehicle, you can go do stuff, you know, more on your own. And, then I just got dove in, man, head first. And I've never come out. Like, so hunting has definitely become, that's like my thing.
Yeah. You're primarily an archer. And you just mentioned that your dad, he was a rifle hunter. Did he do both, or was he just primarily a rifle hunter?
Yeah. So he's my dad and I are kind of opposite on that. Like, he's primarily a rifle hunter, and he kind of uses archery as just an opportunity if he doesn't get a rifle tag. I am the exact opposite. Every tag I put in for is all archery hunts. And over the counter hunts I do, most of them I do with a bow. The only time I ever like really even consider picking up a rifle is for bear season out here. And I think that really boils down to what I was telling you about earlier, is just like the number of bears. Sometimes it's pretty hard just to turn up one, you know? So, and I love bear meat, you know what I mean? So, as far as opportunity goes, yeah, sometimes I'll do that with a rifle instead of a bow, but that, yeah, mainly a bow hunter though, man. Yeah.
So what got you into archery?
My dad, he did, he brought a bow home, one day. And I remember it was like probably as heavy. It felt like it was as heavy as a cinder block back then. It looked like something out of Rambo. And shot the bow, and just like that first time I shot it, I was just completely captivated by it. You know, flight of the arrow, that whole deal. And yeah, I just really got into shooting a bow. And then my dad ended up getting a new one. And I got handed down that relic of a bow that I first shot, and went on my first deer hunt with it. And the amount of deer that we saw on that hunt, it, particularly bucks, just like completely stomped any rifle hunt we've ever been on. So to me, I was like, man, because we can hunt them during the rut with a bow down here.
Yeah, right. So it's just I mean, like, see up here, we have a very short archery season, which is September 1st to September 9th. And then the rest is rifle. And, it, you know, for whitetail deer, it's open till the end of November. So, you know, like I was saying, we have a very liberal hunting season up here. So, but yeah, I know down there you guys have different, it's, you know, it's a lot more complicated in terms of what seasons you can hunt with what.
Yeah. Yeah. So because of that, because, you know, I was like, man, this is a great, you know, those over the counter tag, see a bunch of bucks. And kind of got out of it a little bit when I got, you know, into my early teens, and just kind of rifle hunted with my dad each year. But then when I got older, I had a buddy get into bow hunting like real, real heavily. And it was kind of this, oh, sweet. I've done that before, you know? So because of him, I started doing it a lot more. And ever since then, bow hunting, just like, you know, even if I didn't get anything, the experiences I had bow hunting completely outweighed any type of rifle hunt I had ever been on in terms of, like, you know, having like an intimate experience with animals and stuff, and just like these cool things that happen whenever you have a bow in your hand. So I've been hooked to the bow pretty hard ever since then.
Yeah, the stuff you have to go through when you're archery hunting is so much different than rifle hunting. It definitely, you know, hones your skills a lot more as a hunter, that's for sure.
Yeah. And there's so much, you know, the old, you know, that would, you know, the saying, the, where the rifle hunt ends, the bow hunt begins, that type of thing. I think there's so much to be said for that, because early on, when I first started bear hunting, actually, you know, I hunted really hard all fall, but when it all came together, it came together in about 30 minutes. Like, I got to my glassing spot, looked down, there's a bear, boom, done. And that, I value that experience a lot. That's like, that was a catalyst for me for, you know, my love for bear hunting. But, you know, fast forward and your mind starts to wonder, you know, it's like, well, what would have happened if I would have had a bow in that situation? And so a couple years ago, as a hunt that comes to mind is, I spotted a bear about 1,000 yards out at last light feeding on prickly pears, and had my bow with me. And I was like, well, you know, gonna go make a run at him. Had only about, you know, 30, 45 minutes left of shooting light. And got over there, and the bear, long story short, the bear ended up passing me as I was heading his way, and I saw him running up the opposite, not running, he was just walking up the opposite hill from me, 350 yards away. And I was like, well, I'm not going to catch up to a bear walking away from me. So I got my call out and I started squawking on that thing. And in about a minute, that bear was at 40 yards down beneath me. And, unfortunately the wind, he caught my wind and he ran off. Okay. But like that right there, if I would have had a rifle, that bear would have been done, you know, right then and there across the hill from me. But because I had the bow with me, I get this like super cool experience, even if I didn't shoot, you know, and it's just like fueled my passion for not only bear hunting, but just bow hunting. There's like a lot of instances like that throughout someone archery hunting.
You said they're eating on prickly pears?
Yeah. Yeah. So we have a prickly pear cactus during the early fall, like mid August to early September. It's all elevation dependent, moisture dependent, but it fruits a like a berry, which is pretty big. Okay. Some of them can get pretty big. Like picture like a just like a strawberry on steroids with spines on it. Yeah,
they eat those things, eh? Crazy.
Oh yeah, they're actually really good. Like my wife and I will go out oftentimes in the fall and go pick them off the cactus with tongs. And then we'll bring them home, burn off the spines on the outside of it. And then she'll make a jelly out of the fruit.
And it sounds good.
Oh yeah, no, it's great, man. Yeah.
Yeah, hard on the inside of your mouth though if you're eating it right off the cactus.
Those bears are tough, man.
Oh yeah, they're tough, man. Yeah, they're crazy tough. So you're a backpack hunter now. What triggered you to become a backpack hunter?
Just a different experience. I think a lot of the years I had hunting with my dad growing up, we had some unfortunate experiences with other hunters. You know, I remember one time in particular, I think I was like 11 or something. We had this buck, you know, it was opening day. Day before opening day, we found this buck. It was a little forky, you know what I mean? It would have been my first deer. And we're like all excited to get in there the next day for the opener, and got in there, you know, did everything right. There's a trail down beneath, like an ATV trail. And hear this vehicle, you know, coming down the trail, and it stops, and then you hear a gunshot. And I was just like, as a kid, I was just crushed, you know what I mean? Like, I was like, dang it, that was going to be my first deer, you know? And then, so there's a bunch of stuff like that that happened when I was a kid, and it just, backpack hunting aside, I just wanted to try to get further and further away from roads. And the further I got away from roads, the more it made sense to sleep back there instead of walking all these miles every day. So that's kind of what led me to it, man. I just, you know, and I read some books on it and just like reading about people's adventures. And I'm like, man, I want to try to do that. So backpack hunting, I was like, man, and that's something I could do with my wife. I could use backpacking as something to do with my wife, and I could just bring my binoculars along away, and get like a little bit of a scouting trip in while I was out there backpacking with my wife, you know.
Smart, man. Smart.
And then when season would come, I'd just, you know, well, this time I'm going to bring my bow in there where I took my wife, you know. So that's kind of how I got into it. And I remember my first backpack hunt ever, backpack was way too heavy, you know, like left the truck and in about 5 minutes I was like, man, how can I get this thing lighter, you know what I mean? Like, just took the kitchen sink with me and got back in there. But the first morning I remember, the first morning I ever woke up in the backcountry, I opened the tent up and it was just like, what a front porch, you know what I mean? Like, I was camped up on top of this big mesa, had snow-capped peaks around me, sun is like just coming up over the horizon, and there's a basin behind me loaded with rutting coos bucks, and I had to walk a whopping 100 yards to get to my glassing spot, you know. So that right there, I was like, man, I got to do this as much as I can, you know. And so for me, along with, you know, how bow hunting has been this thing that's, you know, you're successful, but it's also just a really cool experience. That's kind of how backpack hunting is to me. It's not just hunting. It's just a whole thing. You know, you get everything with it, just like living wild, living in the dirt. And then you're trying to bring, you know, you're trying to fill a tag all at the same time. So kind of like the full experience with that.
Yeah. It's not just the added benefit of, you know, getting away from hunting pressure, you know. Yeah. It's the, like you said, you wake up and you're out in the woods and there's nobody around. It's something else. And once you get over that initial fear, or, mm-hmm. you know, the uncomfortability and of actually sleeping out in the bush, and, you know, you're kind of vulnerable and exposed out there. Once you get over that, yeah, it's hard to beat, man.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Nothing like it. You know, I have a buddy that super new, you know, to the backcountry hunting thing. And he just wanted to come along, you know, a couple of years back. We backpacked into an area for bears and he didn't even bring a weapon with him, you know, and he just wanted to experience it. And he came out of that just like with the biggest smile ever, you know, and we didn't even see a bear, you know, like it was. So just the whole grind of it, you know, all of it, you know, cooking food out there, sleeping, it is the purest form of quiet that there is. It's addicting. It's definitely not for everybody, but for the people that it is for, I feel like we love it to the fullest.
Yeah, exactly. It's not for everybody. And, you know, it's, there's a lot goes into it, and you got to, you know, mentally and physically, you know, it's grueling, but, you know, once the biggest thing I think is getting comfortable being uncomfortable. And I know people have probably heard that saying a lot, but it's definitely true. Once you're comfortable being uncomfortable out in the backcountry, you know, it's definitely addicting.
Oh yeah. I mean, and it's not, like, not just like the whole mental side of things, you know, being back there and kind of your mind is your own worst enemy, you know, and you come up with all these crazy scenarios in your head that are really, in all reality, they're quite irrational. But aside from that though, like, there's a lot easier ways to hunt, you know what I mean? Like, like you put yourself through hell trying to get into some of these areas, you know, and you, so sometimes, you know, you start to question, you're like, why am I doing this? You know, like, once you get back there and you start seeing stuff and just start trying to go through the motions, it becomes quite evident why you're doing it. You know, I have, I've been made fun of before in the past because I've told people, you know, I'd rather go backpack, you know, 5 miles in somewhere and hunt 3 bears than hunt 20 bears close to the road. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just kind of not just, that's my bag. You know what I mean? That's kind of what I'm after. So.
Yeah, definitely, man. Now most people know you as a dialed in hunter. Maybe you can explain that for us a little bit.
The name how that all.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the name, how and when did that all come about? You know, dialed in.
Yeah. Hunter. Yeah. So, I don't think I've ever talked about this. The reason it's called Dialed In Hunter, so I was in a band. I played music all through my childhood, pretty much from the time I was 12 until I was 24. Did the whole, you know, touring thing and, you know, living in a van, stuff like that. It was a good time.
What's the name of the band?
That band was called Red Sun.
Cool.
Yeah. So it was like punk hardcore stuff. We had a song called Dialed In, and it was about like getting, instead of, you know, it was like living on the frequency of love rather than hate. So when I stopped playing music, that was a big deal to me. You know, I was like, I didn't have an outlet anymore. And soon after that, I was like, man, I wonder if I think I might start writing about these hunting adventures and stuff. Cause every time I'd come back from hunts, everyone were going to go, they want to go have coffee with me and they want to hear the story and stuff like that. I'm like, maybe I can just like put it all in one place while documenting my kind of journey of like really diving into hunting. And maybe that can provide some other newer hunter some good perspective. You know, and like being truly, like being truthful about things. Because at the time, I think it's gotten a lot better, but at the time, hunting media, you really get this like, you know, particularly on like, you know, like TV, you really get these like highlight reel.
Yeah, and it's distorted. That's the hard thing, right? You know, you watch those videos and guy, 15 minutes, a guy shoots a giant buck or, you know, a B&T elk, and you're like, oh, okay, well, that can do it. And if you're not, yeah, exactly. And if you're not, or you're new to hunting, then yeah, it's
yeah. So like you get out there and you're like, well, am I the worst hunter there is? You know what I mean? Like, what am I doing wrong? It's like, the fact of the matter is, no, you're not, you're probably not doing anything wrong. Hunting's just hard, you know? So I wanted to be really open with all that, like talk about all my failures as well as like the small bits of positive reinforcement that I had throughout that, those experiences, whether it was like, oh, I actually found a bear, or it maybe I missed a bear. And to me, like, you do that, it's like, man, you missed, that means you can do it, right? Because now you're only talking about inches. It is a matter of inches of you actually succeeding and not succeeding. So by putting all that out there, I thought it would be kind of a good resource and kind of a way for me to like, you know, work out my own stuff, you know, like it was like a new outlet for me. So transitioning from music to that, I didn't want to forget about my past, you know? So I created the name Dialed In Hunter based off of that song I mentioned when I was a kid. And that's kind of just for me. Really, nobody knows that. I've never talked about this before, I don't think. And that's, and I feel like it kind of worked good with hunting stuff. You know, people talk about, oh, I'm going to get my bow dialed in, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. So it kind of had a dual meaning to it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what you think of right away, right? So, but that's a cool name.
Yeah. Yeah. No, hey, thanks. Yeah. I definitely grateful for where it's gone and stuff. I never planned on it getting to where it is. It was just, like I said, it was just like an outlet for me, and I didn't even know anyone was reading it.
Yeah. So you started writing, what outlet were you using? Was this like a blog, or were you writing for a magazine, or?
Oh yeah. Yeah. So Dialed In Hunter, that was a blog, and it still is. It's still active today. It's not as active as it used to be, 'cause I do, quite a bit of freelancing. That's my job now. So, sometimes Dialed In Hunter gets put on hold on the writing side of things. So yeah, it was a blog. And then from that, after a couple years of doing that, you know, like I said, I didn't think anyone was reading it, but apparently people were reading it. And I started getting, you know, an email here, an email there from an editor, you know, of an online publication or a magazine. And hey, would you write this? Would you write that? And that's kind of how I started off in the freelancing writing world. And then I just kind of took it and ran with it. I write a whole bunch now.
Yeah. So did you have, do you have a bit of writing and background in writing? Like, did you go to school for that or anything?
No, completely self-taught. I didn't go to school for any of that. And that was kind of funny. Like I was concerned about that actually when I first started doing this freelancing thing. And I remember, like, I emailed a couple close friends and within the hunting industry. I'm like, hey, do you need to have like a degree in writing in order to like be a freelance writer? And they're like, no, not at all, man. I don't have that. So kind of funny, but that's kind of how the beginning started out.
Yeah, I guess it's just all, you got good content, so that's all you need.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, I don't know. I think there's a lot to be said for perspective. Like, obviously you need to know how to like put words together, right? And be a little bit of a wordsmith and try to be creative. But for the most part, like my articles, what I really try to do with them is I write how I talk. You know, when somebody reads my articles, I want them to feel like they're having a conversation with me, not like I'm trying to talk over them at all. You know what I mean? I just want to be on the same wavelength as they are.
Mm-hmm. So now, but you took that freelance writing, and you wrote a book, and, you know, dude, I read your book, and it's pretty damn good, man. It caters a bit more to the new backpack hunter.
Yep.
Maybe you can tell us a bit about it.
Yeah. So what you said is catered to the new backpack hunter. That's exactly what I was going for with it. And the reason I wanted to write that is because when I started out backpack hunting, there were like, the information was out there, but it was really hard to condense into one place. And if somebody's really motivated, they can go find all this information in a bunch of different places. But I wanted to make like a one-stop shop for somebody, whether they didn't even know if they wanted to backpack hunt, all the way to they're packing an animal out back to the truck. Like everything in between that, I wanted to put in one place so someone can read this and be like, now I'm gonna go on my first backpack hunt. Like they got everything that they need. So it took me like a year and a half to put the whole book together. And it's been overwhelming. I'm very, very grateful for the response I've gotten from it. From 18 year olds all the way for people that are 50 have gotten a hold of me and, you know, kind of thanked me for writing the book and stuff like that. So it's just that really gratifying, man.
Yeah. The name of it is Becoming a Backpack Hunter. It's, you know, like I said, I read it and it's good stuff. Absolutely. Were you nervous when it finally got released? When did it come out initially?
It came out last March.
Oh yeah. 2020. Gotcha.
Yeah. So what was kind of funny about that was, you know, when COVID hit, there was just like this recipe of stuff that made me just hit the ground running and finish the book. I was on the very edge of leaving my job. My daughter was about to be born that June. You know what I mean? And I had all this content sitting. I had most of the book written. I just had to finish it. You know what I mean? Put the final touches on it. So once COVID hit and basically my previous job, I really didn't have anything there, you know what I mean, as far as income. So I was like, well, just going to go full send on freelancing and getting this book finished. So that's what really made me finish the book, you know, and I'm like, I'm not going to have time once my daughter comes. So got the book finished before she came, you know. Yeah. And And to answer your question, like, was I nervous? Yeah, dude. Like, you put yourself out there like that, like with a book, like just wondering about like, oh, people are going to rip me apart for this, because I'm pretty open in the book. And I say, like, I'm not an expert, you know, like that's not me. I'm not here to talk about all the cool stuff that I do. I'm here to talk to you, like, and try to help guide you in the right direction, because I was there. Like, I know the stupid questions that beginners ask. So I wanted to address all that stuff. I mean, I think it turned out good, you know. We're working on another one right now.
Are you? Nice. Yeah, no, it's good, man. Like I said, it definitely can be hard, you know, going through as a you know, somebody who's just starting out wanting to get in the backcountry, you know. It's something that, you know, if you've done it your whole life and you had a good mentor, you kind of take it for granted. You know what I mean? Like, you know, myself, I had a great mentor and, you know, my cousin, he was a backpack hunter and he kind of took me under his wing. And, you know, so I kind of had that, but there's a lot of people who these days, especially, they just don't have that. So for the stuff in this book, it's great for anybody who wants to or needs access to all that information, but, you know, spread out over a plethora of different books and online material. Here you kind of get it all in, you know, like you said, a one-stop shop.
Yeah, it's a different, we are living in an age where the adult onset hunter is more and more common, you know, like long ago, right? Hunting was normal. Like, it was normal for kids to go hunting with their dad. When I was growing up though, man, like I was the only kid that I knew that like hunted with his dad. And it wasn't until I was in sixth grade when I actually met somebody else that shared the love of hunting that I did. Coincidentally, he's still my best friend. So like, it's just becoming less and less common for kids to get out in the outdoors and stuff. So I think what's interesting about all this is, like, you know, you got these like adult onset hunters and it's like, why do they want to do that?
You yeah. know,
I think it's, I, and I think it's because it's ingrained in us as humans.
Definitely.
You know, it's what our I nature. Mean? Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're even if their parents didn't bring them up in hunting, they grow up and they just have this natural urge, man, I just want to go experience wild places and stuff. And like, you know, maybe bring some meat home, you know, and kind of go through that whole experience.
Yeah. Well, and that's a huge aspect of it too. You know, we ate mostly wild game when I was growing up, and these days, you know, you just don't, you know, like we still, you know, my wife, she loves chicken. So she still buys a lot of chicken and it's like, well, you know, you don't really know what's going on with that chicken or where it's from or the process that all went through from getting it from an egg to on your dinner table. Sure. So yeah. But I mean, it's just, that's another aspect, you know, for a lot of people too. I think just, you know, knowing where their meat's coming from, and especially in today's world with all, there's so much crap going on everywhere. You never know.
Oh yeah. No recalls in my freezer.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
So, your book, I mean, it goes through, you know, it goes through so much stuff. It starts off with, you know, introduction to yourself. And then it kind of goes through, well, you know, asking the question, why do you want to backpack? And, you know, you kind of go through that, which is great. And then you get quite a bit into gear, which is, you know, for any backpack hunter, I think gear is, you know, myself, I'm a gear junkie.
Oh yeah.
I don't know about you, but it just always looking for gear, looking to see what's new and what's improved and all this stuff. So
I think that's just like a natural. I you know what, man? I've never met a backpack hunter that wasn't into gear.
Yeah.
You know, and I think the reason for that is, like, there's just a natural progression, right? Like, we're always looking to make things lighter, or always looking to make things more efficient, you know, because backpack hunting is hard enough as it is, right? You know, if like, oh man, I can get this new pillow and save 5 ounces, right?
Yeah. Like yeah, exactly. Yeah. So. And it's, you get hooked up on those things though. You notice, like, man, I mean, I do anyway. You're like, oh yeah, I could get this. You're like, well, I got to buy a new one. My last one's worked pretty good, but man, I'd love to try it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe, go ahead.
I was going to say, yeah, we never need this stuff. You know, it's always us just trying to, you know, our curiosity on trying to make things better.
Yeah, definitely. It drives my wife nuts. It's just like, well, need that? No, I don't need it, but just want to try it.
Yeah.
Yeah, no doubt. So maybe we can, I mean, you got so much great stuff in the gear section of your book, but maybe we can just talk a little bit about like a pack setup. Maybe we can kind of just go over, like, you know, what you're carrying for like a 3-day backpack hunt, you know, what type of pack you're running, you know, what you're bringing for optics, tent, you know, tent, no tent, that kind of thing.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So I have, I've used XO Mountain Gear packs for quite a few years now, and been super happy with them. I feel like I've been following them ever since they started out. You know, I remember the owner carrying around 200 pounds of dog food while testing the pack out before it was on the market. And I thought that was really cool. So I went through, man, first couple backpacks I had, it was just, if anyone out there, it doesn't matter if you get an XO or whatever, another backpack, another like high-end pack, don't skimp on a backpack. I'm telling you what, dude, like, it matters. It really does. I used to have a pack where every single time I put the waist belt on, my hip flexor would immediately fire up and be like burning, even with a day weight in it. So, love that backpack. I use a 4800, the K3 4800, for like a sleeping system. What I'm doing is, that really depends, like, as far as like sleeping bag or quilt goes, it just depends on the temperature. For probably 80% of the year, I'm using a 20 degree quilt, down quilt, from Enlightened Equipment. I believe it's their Revelation is what it's called. Been super happy with that thing. That thing's 19 ounces, man. Super ultralight, efficient. You can kind of sleep a little bit more comfortable because you can sprawl out. You're not like in a coffin, in a mummy sack. But when it gets a little colder, I'll use, I actually just picked this up, super, super pumped on this sleeping bag, actually. It's from Feathered Friends. I believe it's the Lark UL10 is the sleeping bag that I just got. 10 degree down sleeping bag. I've been really impressed with it, man. I've had it out for the past couple of months now, spring bear hunting, and no complaints. Obviously, it's a tad bit larger on the packability front than my quilt is, but I feel like whenever you dip down the temperatures a little bit, that's just natural. Yeah. Everything's going to be a little bit bigger.
Yeah. I was going to ask you about those quilts. I've never used one. I think mostly just because the temperatures up here, you never know. It could be nice and warm when you leave, or for the first day, and then all of a sudden it could be cold. So, yeah, I was wondering about those.
Yeah, for sure. They are, I think the number one thing to pay attention to with a quilt is really how to set it up. I feel like a lot of people have bad experiences with their quilt because it's not set up right on their sleeping pad. So most quilts, they attach to your sleeping pad. And you can really you can make them quite warm and not get a draft or anything. I think that's the number one complaint about quilts, is like, oh, I get a draft because it's not completely enclosed around you. like a sleeping bag is. Well, there's these straps that'll strap to your sleeping pad, and you need to set up the little clips in a way that you can set these clips up to a way that this quilt actually does wrap fully around you. So when the temperature drops a little bit more, you can do that. And then I've also used a liner as well to try to get a little more, some more degrees out of the quilt. But I think it's just super versatile, man, you know, cause you can use it from like, you know, it's 50 degrees at night all the way to, you know, I've used it in the 20s, you know, the wide range of stuff. When it's a little hotter, you can sleep with like one leg out of your quilt, like you would at home, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's the only thing I find with sleeping bags, like the mummy type, is that if it is warm, it's not very comfortable. It's not, you know, you got to zip the thing down, and then it, you know, it just, its natural tendency is to wrap around you. So yep. That's one thing I find with the, you know, with the mummy style sleeping bags, when it is warm, it's warm, sure. It's not as comfortable.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I mean, it's a push and pull, you know what I mean? You gotta deal with one of them, depending on the temperature. So yeah, no, I've been super happy with the quilts, man. And then shelter wise,
pillow? You a pillow guy or no pillow?
Oh, forgive me for not talking about the pillow. Yes, I'm a pillow guy. Avid pillow guy. I like the Sea to Summit Eros. I think it's like 2 ounces. It's really lightweight. It's an inflatable pillow. Works out great. The only downside about using that pillow, particularly with a quilt, is the pillow tends to move around a lot more. Whereas with like a sleeping bag, the mummy style sleeping bag, I would put that pillow inside the hood.
Yeah.
And then it won't move around. It stays right there pretty good. But with the quilt, man, like every time you turn or like flip around and stuff like that, you need to like grab the pillow, put it back to where it should be. Yeah. So that's the only downside, but yeah, I'm a pillow guy, man. Shelter. I don't use floorless really at all here in Arizona. I like a fully enclosed shelter, and I think that's kind of just because of where I live. You know, we got rattlesnakes, chiggers, you know what I mean? Like all sorts of stuff, tarantulas, scorpions.
Bunch of critters you don't need cruising around in your sleeping bag.
Yeah. I'm not a fan of that. I think my favorite shelter at this point ever made is the Nemo Hornet 2-person shelter. It's a semi-freestanding tent, sets up really fast. It's about a 2-pound shelter for like stakes and everything. So packed down super light or super small. So for the most part, that is what I have with me. I'd say 75% of the time. If I want to go super light, I really dig the spike from Nemo. That's the Nemo First Light spike. That thing's only 1 pound, and it sets up with a trekking pole. And I've had good experiences with that thing. So. And that is a fully enclosed shelter as well. Like there's a floor on that. So, that's what I'm rocking for shelters.
Do those hold up in the wind? Like if you get some wind, they're not bad or?
It's not bad. I've had it in some pretty good winds up like in like windy saddles and stuff. And I just guy it out, you know what I mean? Just guy it out with guy lines and everything. So.
Cool.
Yeah, man.
Go ahead.
Sleeping pad. Want me to?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. Sleeping pad. I've been a one and done fella for quite a while with a sleeping pad. I use the Therm-a-Rest NeoAir X Lite.
Nice. I got the same one.
12 ounces, you know, I mean, hard to beat, packs super small. The only downside about it is it's pretty noisy. When you like try to flip around and stuff. So if you're sleeping, if you got some buddies, like if you are in like a bigger shelter and you got some buddies in there, you might get a boot thrown at you in the middle of the night. So.
Yeah. No, I got the same one at R4. It's great. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Cool, man. How about food? What type and how much food are you bringing for a 3-day hunt?
Yeah. So, I need to get better about this. Actually, right when I started out, I would count all my calories and stuff and, do that whole thing. And then I just kind of got used to what to bring, and I stopped doing that. And so when I was doing that, I would sit around 2,800 calories a day for food. Usually do something like, for breakfast, it might be like homemade oatmeal, like rolled oats with some protein powder, raisins, almond butter, that type of deal. then like snacks, it's just kind of snack throughout the whole day after that. Trail mix, jerky, Packaroons, Heather's Choice Packaroons. Those are great. Gummy bears. I don't think it's allowed to go bear hunting without gummy bears.
Maybe that's what I'm missing. I need some gummy bears.
You know what? If you would have had gummy bears, yeah, those branches might not have been there.
That's it. So
okay, I'm just saying. and then I kind of do that throughout the whole day. I just kind of snack throughout the whole day on stuff like that. And then for dinner, I usually bring either I make my own stuff every now and then. I probably should do more of that, but it's really a time thing for me. But I make bear spaghetti and dehydrate that. That's delicious out there. Chili is like elk chili. Goodness gracious, it's so good out on the mountain. You got like a home cooked meal out there. But for store bought stuff, I stick to I'm either bringing like Peak Refuel or Heather's Choice meals out with me. Love like the mom spaghetti from Heather's Choice, the salmon chowder, that's another one of my favorites, and then Peak Refuel. Home style chicken, that's a new favorite of mine from them, as well as like the chicken Alfredo. Feel like that's a really good one too. So yeah, man, that's kind of my get up for food.
Yeah, you talk about that in your book a bit too, the dehydrated food. And I'm kind of the same way for breakfast. Yeah, I love that, homemade, just make it at home, throw mm-hmm. a little bit of protein powder in there, that and a nice hot coffee, which I don't think I can go without.
Forgive me, I totally forgot that.
Yeah,
I gotta have coffee in the morning.
some guys can pull it off. I've been with guys who are like, "You want a coffee?" And like, nope. And you're like, man, I can't do it. That and if it's a wet and gloomy day, nice cup of Joe, it's just, yeah, you can't beat it. I use the I've gone to just instant coffee just for simplicity, but.
Oh yeah, it's awesome, man. You gotta have. It's more about like. I sometimes question if I'm drinking it to wake up or just to do it because I like it.
Yeah. I get it. I can't go without it. Like, I used to drink a lot more than I do now. I cut back quite a bit, but mm-hmm. I just every morning, I just can't go without it. And if I do, it's just not the same. It's just a shitty start to the day.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you.
I better have some gummy bears in my pocket. That's for sure. If I don't get
gummy coffee. Bears, gummy bears and coffee, and watch out bears.
Yeah, but anyway, back to that dehydrator. Yeah. My wife picked me up one for Christmas. So that's one thing I was going to try to do over the summer was get into packaging my own meals. And you mentioned cool. that in your book. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really cool, man. It's very cost effective. Obviously, you got to front the money for the dehydrator and everything, but it pays for itself pretty quick. You think about like, you make like a full crock pot of chili, dude, you're going to get like 5 meals out of that or something, as well as dinner that night. And you're going to pay, especially if you got like, you got like wild game in the freezer, you're going to pay like a whopping $12 or something. For like that whole pot of chili.
Yeah, those instant meals, yeah, they're not cheap.
For one pot of chili, you're going to buy one dinner from a store, pretty much is how I look at it. 5 meals, man. I mean, it adds up after a while. It's good stuff.
Yeah, definitely. Hey, what's it like down in Arizona? What's it like you know, once you get your animal down, how is it to keep, you know, for dressing the meat? Like, how do you keep it cool in, you know, that desert heat?
Yeah. So obviously, like, this is very like seasonal dependent, right? You know, believe it or not, it does get, now, like I said earlier, cold is different to us up here than up where you are. Okay. But like in our deer seasons in December and January, you know, it could get down into the, you know, most of the time it's sitting in like the 30s, right around there, mid 20s. There's plenty of times though where it gets in the, you know, I've been out there and, you know, it's 10 degrees or even single digits on those hunts. So in that, on those hunts, it's not too difficult to keep meat good.
Yeah.
But the ones that you really gotta like keep, you know, keep after is like our August bear hunts, September elk, you know, that type of stuff. I mean, it gets really hot, man. And there is no option for, I've done this before and I, you know, it sucks really bad. You know, you absolutely cannot leave an animal overnight. There's no way to do it during that time of year. One time we did that with a bear one time and got to it the next morning. And, you know, it was good while we were cutting it up, but there was something weird about it. You know what I mean? It was just a little too pliable. And then got it home and it smelled like a fart, you know, and it just really, really unfortunate. You know what I mean? My brother lost the head of the hide on that bear because it was just slipping and stuff. So it was just really unfortunate. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. You know, you live and learn, you know? So
yeah, definitely.
But typically, I mean, really, I mean, it's not that hard. I mean, when you get something down, the clock is ticking right away. You need to get over there, get that thing taken care of off of the carcass. Separate the meat from the carcass as fast as you can, and as safe as you can. I should mention that, because I've almost cut my thumb off before. And you'll be fine. You know, you get on it right away. You're not going to lose anything, you know? So, it's for people that they lack the urgency, and it happens every single year, you know? You need to really be on top of that. But we do have, you know, if you do need to hang meat, you know, some people, they're like, do you, I did a podcast one time and people are like, is there trees there? I'm like, yeah, dude, there's trees here, you know? So we have, you know, I mean, same practice you would anywhere else. You know what I mean? Like find a, you know, shade in a tree, thick north face, you know, bottoms will have water running through them and they'll be a little bit cooler. Right. You just gotta just use your head, you know, and don't dilly dally.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Cool. What about like an InReach or a SpotX? You carry that out with you?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I started. Yeah. So I used to, I'm sure a lot of guys used to do this before I had an InReach. I would like leave a note on my truck. Yeah. Like, to like where I was going or whatever like that, which now I think about that and I'm like, goodness gracious, I wonder how many people got my hunting spot from doing that.
Yeah. As soon as you pulled out, they were pulling in right behind you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I really did that. It was like more for my wife. You know what I mean? Like, cause I'd tell her where I was going to park. And I'd leave her with like a Google Maps pin of kind of the area I was thinking about hunting, but no, man, dude, an InReach is a game changer. I started using that and, really when I started backpack hunting a lot, just cause you know, those areas tend to not have any service in them. And, yeah, I use the Garmin, 66i is the one that I carry with me. I love that one cause it links to my watch. I have a Garmin watch with, yep. Yeah. Pretty slick setup. So I really like that because I can leave the InReach in my backpack and I really just use my watch most of the time. If I'm like, oh, this is a great glassing spot, let me mark this spot or whatever. And then they link up, you know, and they sync together. So that waypoint will automatically be put in the InReach on the InReach map.
Oh yeah. That's cool, man.
So pretty cool. Yeah. Yeah.
What's the battery life like on that watch? Not too bad.
The watch, you'll get 10 days out of it. I think it's rated for 13 or something like that. but it really just depends. I mean, it depends on how much you use it. You know, like I don't do, I'm not doing like track backing on it or anything like that. Like the most that I do with it is like marking waypoints. I've used the compass before because I got lost. Also like if I'm navigating to like a glassing spot through dense brush where I kind of, you know, you kind of need something like that in the dark, right? To like know mm-hmm. which direction you're headed. I use it for that too. But other than that, yeah, I get about 10 days out of it in the field.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I use the Spot X. It's, that's the only way my wife's going to let me go out on these trips is with a Spot X messenger just to check. And it's good too. I find that way it kind of, you know, if there's ever anything to happen back at home, and you know, you're on day two of a 10 or 14 day mm-hmm. backpack trip, you know, it would be pretty devastating if you didn't find out something bad happened till, you know, when you had the chance to come out a little earlier.
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah, man. So how's this, how is what you're running now changed from, you know, your first backpack trip?
Well, my first shelter was 7 pounds. So that's a big deal. The biggest change across the board is just really weight and compressibility. That's the biggest thing. Also, you know, you tend to, when you first start out, you tend to bring some stuff that you think you need, but in all reality, you don't. Like, I don't know why, dude, for some reason, I used to bring a speed loader with extra ammo for my handgun with me. For what? You know what I mean? Like, why? Yep. Like, what?
Oh, yeah, man.
Like the zombie apocalypse is going to happen or something like that? I just need to start blasting things? Like, that's not, it's just not realistic. So, pared that down. Doing stuff like, dude, I don't know, like diving into some of these like pre-made survival kits and stuff like that and kind of weeding through them and being like, well, what do I need? What do I don't need? Stuff like that. Like customizing med kits, you know, putting stuff that really tailors more to you, you know, like not everyone is going to need insect repellent in there, you know, like, I don't know, some of that stuff comes in there. It's like, you don't really need that.
Yeah.
Just stuff like that, man. Like the more that you get out there and do it, the more that you really find out what you do and you don't need. And I think the best way to do that is you just make a list, you know,
yeah.
Just make a list, like make a gear list and, you know, keep track of what you use and don't use. And if you go 2-3 trips without using something and it's not something like a first aid kit, chances are you could probably leave it at the truck.
Yep.
You know, just fact of the matter, you know, so.
Yeah. And I think that's one thing everyone has to go through. You know what I mean? It's kind of, you know, some stuff that's going to, and some things that my body needs and what works for me is going to be a little different than what works for you, even if we're doing the exact same hunt for the exact same amount of time. It's just, you know,
yep.
Everyone's kind of got to go through that trial and error process. I remember the same thing at the beginning, you know, my medical kit, it had everything in there. You know what I mean? Tweezers and bug spray and mm-hmm. you know, all this crap that you know, if you need it, you don't really, you know, you can live mm-hmm. without it. That's the thing now. I mean, in my med kit now, I have some bacterial wipes, roll of hockey tape and, you know, a needle and thread and a thing of ibuprofen and that's about it.
Yep.
You kind of just gotta you gotta go through that though. And I think, and you have to just experience it for yourself. And same with clothes, right? When you're going out on, say, you know, a 5-day trip, you don't, you know, one set of clothes will do you don't need to be carrying a new set of clothes every day.
And I remember that, dude, that was a trip for me when I started out, because like that's all I knew was like, oh, when you go hunting, you have this like giant tent that you can stand up in and a suitcase with your clothing in it, you know, and like for, you know, like 3 pairs of pants and blah, you know, just all this stuff that it's just not realistic. It's not yeah. practical to bring with you on a backpack hunt. And that's what really started making me look more into higher end like clothing. Because before backpack hunting, I would have never considered spending the amount of money that one spends on high end hunting yep. clothing now, you know, but like, that's what you're saying though, you know, you kind of got to experience these things and it's like, you know what, spending X amount of dollars on that that jacket, I think that's worth it.
Good
call, man. I think so.
Yeah, definitely. And again, it goes back to that process. You gotta, you know, you just gotta get out there and do it. And if it doesn't work the first time, don't get discouraged. Just, you know, try something a little different. I mean, yeah, I went through it lots, and I remember my first 10-day backpack trip was a lot different than, you know, like the last one. And now even on a 10-day backpack trip, the only thing I'll double up is my socks. Everything else, you know, the underwear I walk in on is the underwear I walk out with, right? So
it's yeah,
but it's just one of those things for sure.
Yeah, man.
So before I let you go here today, Josh, I kind of want to just touch on training, and you go ahead and go over this in your book. Sure. And maybe we can mix in, you know, with your archery background and experience, maybe we can just mix a bit of that in there too. And just, you know, training and practicing for the backcountry, you know, as I mentioned earlier, you know, I misjudged my arrow path. And, you know, even though I do practice that, and that's something I'm cautious of, you know, it does happen. But so, you know, when you're trying to simulate, when you're training and trying to simulate, you know, an actual hunt situation, what are some of the ways you train, you know, for like a backpack hunt?
Are you referring to shooting, or are you referring to like physical fitness?
You know, both. Maybe, you know, like, are you, when you train, are you, do you have a backpack on? Are you putting weight in there? Are you like, you doing cardio that way, or are you just strictly in the gym? And then when you're also, when you're shooting your bow, are you practicing, you know, are you doing any, you know, running 10 yards, getting up, down, are you crouching, you know what I mean? That kind of thing.
Gotcha. Yeah. So, as far as like, you know, the physical fitness side of things, I really intertwine these two things because I think that is just more realistic to the field. You're not going to like get gassed and then all of a sudden not be gassed when it's time to shoot your bow, like at an animal. I think you need to do these two things in tandem. So in a nutshell, what I do, I'll go into a little bit more training after this, but like what I do is like, I'll do my workout. And then my routine is when I'm done with my workout, I grab my bow and I go out and I shoot, because you're shooting under stress, under physical stress, which is exactly, it's not exactly, but you're getting there. It's similar to what you're going to experience in the field. Okay. Like shooting with weak muscles and stuff. I feel like that's normal, man. Like that's how it's going to be when it's on your hunt. You're going to have weak muscles, your brain is going to be scrambled, and you're going to be shaking like a leaf a lot of times. So I think that's the best way to simulate that. As far as like what I do for physical training, might get a little flack for this. Okay. So a lot of hoopla gets put on, like, you know, bench pressing and curling and all this stuff. That's not going to help you. I think backpack hunting, you need to train with purpose. And while doing like those sexy workouts, if you would, is fun, it's not that practical for backpack hunting specifically. So what I like to do for backpack hunting is I focus on core, my core strength, legs, and my back. Like that right there is like the chain I feel like that's going to help you the most with backpack hunting. Like all the things that are involved with that, like your core, I feel like is going to help you with stability, particularly with heavy loads. Okay. I mean, there's been many times where I'm like side hilling and maybe I slip or something, and the thing that's going to save you is like one of the biggest things that's going to save you is your core. It's going to keep you upright. Okay. Like your legs, a lot of this stuff is steep. You know what I mean? Like doing stuff like getting on the Stairmaster with a weighted pack is very similar to hunting steep country. Throw 50 pounds in your backpack or whatever, and just go on that Stairmaster for 20 minutes or something. Right. And build your endurance. And that right there, I feel like the word endurance is like the key word to focus on with like your training for backpack hunting. Being like, strength is important. It is, but I think endurance is more important, because endurance is going to keep you going when you don't want to go. And for me, that's backpack hunting. You're going to be exhausted. Right. So I have a friend, ready? I got a friend where he focuses most of his training on strength. This is a dude, this dude's super strong. He's in great shape. Okay. And he's good at what he does. We just got back from a bear hunt. Okay. A couple weeks ago, we spot a bear three ridges over. Okay. And me, I'm like, well, we got to go. You know what I mean? So like, you know, we grab our packs and we start bombing down the hill. By the first hill, you know, first we'd like, we go down, we come up by that first time we get up, this dude, I mean, he sounded like he's gonna die, and we had like another two ridges to go, you know what I mean? So, and he was so like, he felt so bad. And like when he got back from that, we got this bear packed out, we spotted the bear 8:30 in the morning, got the bear killed at 10:30, and we got back to the truck at 5:30. Okay, by the time he got back, he was telling me, he was like, dude, I'm going to completely flip around how I train for these hunts, because he wasn't lacking anything in strength. He was lacking endurance. He just didn't have the gas to keep going. You know what I mean? So that to me is one of the most important things. And for me, I don't go crazy with with lifting weights or anything. I think like a couple of great things to have is like a kettlebell. You could do a whole lot with a kettlebell. Goblet squats and stuff like that. But largely what I do is like box jumps, pull-ups, and pull-ups are for your back muscles for your bow. I do that a lot, because you're working your rhomboid when you do that. Same thing with rows. Like if you do rows with like a kettlebell, you're working that muscle where you pull your bow back with that. Also I do a lot of bike, like I go on a bike a lot, and I do like, I'll do like an interval set of like for 30 minutes straight, I'll go super hard for 1 minute and then moderate pace for 5 minutes, super hard for 1 minute, moderate pace for 5 minutes. And I do that for 30 minutes straight. And you will feel like a newborn fawn after you do that.
But that's good to simulate that kind of, because I mean in the backcountry you're going hard and then you know you could plateau and then you're up again and then you know you can plateau again, or you're going hard and then it's time to stop and watch or wait. So
yeah, and then for like when I actually pick the bow up, what I do a lot of times is you know, you're already under physical stress a bit, so I like to shoot one arrow with a broadhead, because that's all you get. Mm-hmm. Right? Like when you're in the field, you don't get five chances to shoot an animal. So I think by limiting yourself to that one arrow, at least just for when you're done working out, right? I think that simulates being in the field really good, because you're gassed, you're weak. You need to really focus and make that shot count, the first shot. With a broadhead, not with a field point, do it with a broadhead, because on that, I feel like it's just mental at that point. Like, I feel like if you know your broadhead is going to go right where you want it to go, you're just going to feel that much more confident in the field. And in my opinion, confidence kills.
Yeah, definitely. I was just going to say that, and confidence is everything, especially with archery.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely, man. But, aside from the physical side of things, a few games that I like to play, I like play some games with my bow. I'll do like, so I do this game I call the rule of three. So I'll start at my top pin, which is 30 yards, and I got to put three arrows into a kill zone area. Okay. If I do that successfully, I move back to 40. Mm-hmm. And I got to do the same thing. And I do that all the way out to my bottom pin, which is 70. If at any point during that time, I one arrow is outside of the kill zone, I get 10 penalty yards and I have to go move back up.
Gotcha. Cool.
This is more of an exercise for consistency, right? Because I feel like most guys that shoot their bow regularly, they can start at 60 or start at 70, start at 50, whatever it is, and put it in the kill zone on first shot.
Yeah.
But can you do it over and over again?
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like that right there, when you're doing that over and over again, now you're simulating being gassed shooting again.
Yeah.
Because you're going to get tired. So I think that's a great exercise.
Yeah, that is. That's cool. I'll try that. I do a lot of, I have the same thing, 30 pin, 70 pin. So I'll just start at the target, walk, turn around, yardage, shoot, walk further, turn around, yardage, shoot, you know, then I'll move in, yardage, shoot, maybe one knee, walk back. And, you know, that's just to break it up too, a bit.
Yeah.
Just to get that extra practice.
I think that's important what you just said too. You said one knee like that. I think it's valuable to do things like, you know, like stand on uneven terrain or something like that when you shoot your bow, like on purpose, like stand on top of a rock or something, or like put a rock underneath your foot, like a bigger rock that makes your foot not sit flat on the ground. 'Cause that's how it's going to be.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I know there's lots of cool things you can do. And I even, you know, I'll take a milk crate and put a 2x8 up on it and stand like, so it's, you know, I'm standing 1 foot higher than the other. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the opposite way, you know, side to side, do things like that just to, 'cause yeah, you're never flat footed with all the time in the world when you're in the backcountry. That's for sure.
No, you're not.
Yeah. Okay, man. You know, I think I'm going to be bugging you to get you back on the show. You know, I got tons of stuff I'd love to ask you and love to pick your brain on, but, you know, in the meantime, where can people find and follow Dialed In Hunter?
Yeah, man. No, appreciate you having me on. Great, great conversation. If anybody wants to keep get a hold of me for whatever, you just want to chat, Instagram, I'm on all the social platforms, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, just search Dialed In Hunter. You can go to my website. I have dialedinhunter.com. And if you want to check out that book that you were mentioning, go to Amazon and search Becoming a Backpack Hunter, Josh Kirshner, and it'll pop up.
Well, I'm going to have links, and then I'll have a section on the webpage where, you know, folks can just click on it and it'll take it right to the Amazon page. And, you know, Canadians can pick that up, and anybody else down in the States, they can had a chance to read it. They can pick it up. Well, tons of great information. You know, I've been hunting a long time, and I read it and I really enjoyed it. There's lots of stuff, even if, you know, it's funny, a lot of these things that you go through, you don't think of why you do them or you know, how you do them. And it's funny, just when you read it, you're like, oh yeah, that, you know, that's a good point. I mean, I know I do it, but you know, this is the reason why. It's just, you know, as you do it for a while, it becomes second nature. And which is why it's important for people, you know, not to get discouraged, you know, just if something that doesn't work, don't give up, just adjust something, and then try it again.
Yeah, man. Yeah. That's exactly what I was going for with it.
Awesome. Okay, man. Thanks a bunch. We'll be in touch.
All right. Thanks, buddy.